Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. All right. We don't do it in the first segment on Wednesdays because we do the crossover, which was fun. Again, you can check that out on YouTube, on Sportsnet's YouTube channel. Shout out to Donnie and Dolly. So we'll do it here to wrap up the show. Let's get into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks today, March 13th. The headlines: the Canucks back playing an NHL game for the first time in a few days. The Casey DeSmith era starts tonight against the Colorado Avalanche. So no easing into it for backup goalie Casey DeSmith as he gets the starter job here, at least temporarily, while Thatcher Demko is injured, going right in it against Nathan MacKinnon, who Nikita Zadorov called the best player in the world at his scrum today. Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Cale Makar, and crew, and a bit of a new look Colorado Avalanche team. I always love when the Avalanche come to town. I mean, MacKinnon and Makar, you know, we all know how fun they can be to watch. I think Mikko Rantanen is an extraordinarily entertaining player as well. But tonight in particular, with Sean Walker replacing Bowen Byram on the blue line, with Casey Mittelstadt replacing Ryan Johansson down the middle, I'm very curious to see what this Colorado team looks like. And they're coming off a really impressive offensive performance in Calgary last night, Drantzer.
The best part about their performance against Colorado was that they were able to rest their top guys, right? Nathan MacKinnon playing very sparingly in the third period. So, yes, they're on the second leg of a back-to-back. Yes, this is the first meeting between these two teams that's played down here where we live at
sea level.
At sea level, as opposed to where the Mountain Men skate opponents off the ice on a regular basis. Opponents who are left winded by the altitude. Not to mention all their lips dry. Very dry up there at elevation.
I gotta say, that's driven me. The cold snap that we're coming out of, thank goodness, but for the last, what, like 2-3 weeks here? Havoc for my skin. I hated it. Hated it.
So soft. Are you saying lip balm sales in high elevation through the roof?
I mean,
are you looking to divest out of crypto or diversify?
Yeah. No, is it?
Buy some Burt's Bees.
Through the roof. Burt's elevation.
Oh, okay. You should have used To the Moon. The ultimate elevation.
Yeah. Or chapstick to the moon.
Okay.
Or Vaseline, you know.
All right, let's get back to it.
Anyway, the elevation's a big factor. Honestly, this is going to be a different type of matchup than the ones the two teams have played previously.
Watch out for those cracked lips. What was the point of that point, honestly?
What? We're just doing the show.
But like,
why are you still talking?
What an anecdote. Like, by the way,
my skin gets really dry.
Skin came up. I don't know.
Oh, you're calling out him for his digression, not me for being like,
yeah.
And not you. You're the one butting in here.
Oh man. All right. Let's get back on the rails.
Let's get back on the rails.
I'm sorry that I brought up how thirsty I get at elevation. You guys should see me crushing watts up there. Holy cow. Every time I go to Denver, I drink a gallon a day minimum. Maybe
sure.
Two.
All right. You just said you're going to get it back on the rails.
I'm talking about elevation.
Okay.
No. Okay, so
they're playing in Vancouver.
The Avs didn't have a real back-to-back, so I think this is a really good test. You know, I don't think this qualifies as your standard issue schedule
back-to-back
win.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a really tough matchup for a Canucks team that's lost to this team twice and against a team that, you know, has some of the attributes that teams that play the Canucks well tend to bring, right? Like the ability to connect play is crucial. If you're not connecting, I mean, we saw it in Vegas, against Vegas. Vegas couldn't connect play from the back end out, and they were dead in the water. Winnipeg, when they beat Vancouver, was brilliant moving the puck up ice. Terrible on Saturday. Canucks stormed them, stomped them. You either move the puck well or you are dead against this Canucks team, and this Avs team is literally built to do it. So a fascinating matchup, a big test for the Canucks against, you know, the Hart Trophy favorite the favorite to be the Norris runner-up, LOL. A lot of talent on that Av side, and they do the five-man unit thing. They will attack you as a five-man unit. They are most dangerous in those minutes, but they've also made upgrades to their roster, and that makes them a little bit more dangerous in those non-Nathan MacKinnon minutes.
Well, and I wonder how much we see five-man unit versus five-man unit here, right? If it is the Miller line that gets the matchup, we've seen it all year that Miller's line has spent a lot of time on the ice with Quinn Hughes and Phil Hronek. Yep. So I wonder if that's even amped up more, so we get two kind of super units against each other.
I hope so. I hope so. Well, and I mean, you look at, you know, the Avalanche basically score more than half their 5-on-5 goals with MacKinnon on the ice. The Canucks score more than half their goals when with Quinn Hughes on the ice. So, you know, this is if we do in fact see a strength on strength hard match, and Rick Tocchet was non-committal about that, right? He was like, we don't really have to do it the way we have in the past. You know, if we do see that, it's going to be fascinating to see, A, whether one side or the other can win that matchup, and B, in the event that those two are matched up, what do the other minutes look like?
Especially because if you're not loading up with the lotto line, right, and let's say you do end up seeing a steady diet of Miller line plus Hughes Hronek against the five-man unit for the Avalanche, that should be where having other lines centered by Elias Pettersson and Elias Lindholm can really pay dividends for you, right? Like, if you're going to go those three centers down the middle, you better be winning the matchups away from Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen in those minutes. Of course, as you said, Colorado has made some of their own upgrades there. And, you know, speaking about Colorado having the profile of teams that can have success against the Canucks, I mean, I think the other part of that is the speed to get in and cause problems on the forecheck against the Canucks blue liners, especially those not named Quinn Hughes. So I think that's something else to look out for. Also, as we talked earlier in the show, really good power play for the Colorado Avalanche. No surprise there. So discipline, staying out of the box. Don't make it any more difficult for Casey DeSmith in this start than it needs to be against the Colorado Avalanche. Other headline to pass along from yesterday, and again mentioned this earlier in the show, but the Canucks re-signing key members, assistant general managers, Cammy Granato and Emily Castonguay to contract extensions, also promoting Ryan Johnson to assistant general manager and signing him to an extension as well. And, you know, somebody texted in, does this mean RJ won't be the Abbotsford GM anymore? And typically that is a role handled by an assistant GM to the big club, right? You're assistant GM for the Canucks as part of your duties, your GM to the AHL team. So I wouldn't expect a change in role necessarily for RJ, but well-deserved for all three. But Ryan Johnson in particular, as a holdover from the previous regime, I think this is a really nice nod to him, to what he's done and how successful that Abbotsford program has been so far under his watch.
Yeah, and an overdue one. I mean, there were moments in that sort of half-transition year where an awful lot was falling on him, given the sort of experience level of the other executives brought in, right? You know, there was a departure from an assistant general manager in Derek Clancy last summer. I think this structure makes a ton of sense. I can tell you specifically what lanes, right, each of these three occupy. Like, the evolution of the Canucks front office, especially from a spot of real discord 12 months ago, I mean, I think that's, you know, subtle, under the radar, obviously not as important as the performance of this team as a whole, but I also don't think those are divorced, right? Like, this team's been winning in the boardroom. It's translated on the ice this season. And these three individuals are a reason why, well-deserved across
and
the
board. And I just look at it, you know, they've had a lot of difficult things to navigate, just purely in terms of personnel decisions, right, since this management group arrived. You know, starting with Bo Horvat and JT Miller, right? They end up signing JT Miller, trading Bo Horvat, making the move for Filip Hronek, the OEL buyout, the Elias Pettersson negotiations and eventually getting him done. And the tough decisions aren't ending, right? Like, how much have we talked about Filip Hronek? We're going to talk more about him coming up here. Tons of UFAs to try to either sign or decide to move on from in the summer. It's going to be another really, really important, really crucial summer. And having that front office in place that's working well, everyone knows their roles, functioning at a high level, so important to going in and being able to make the best decisions in these really difficult positions, I think. And I think we've started to see the fruits of that over the last 12 months here for the Canucks front office. To the broadsheet, I wanted to pass on a couple of tidbits from Satyar Shah on Canucks Central yesterday. So, of course, Patrick Alvin said last week on the trade deadline on Canucks Central with Dan and Sapp that the Canucks had made Filip Hronek an offer. Sat saying that he believes it was for 8 years with an AAV probably somewhere between 6.5 and 7, so just kind of in the low $50 million total dollar range. Sat also saying, however, that not only do the Canucks not have any interest in going to 8 for Filip Hronek, but they'd love to keep it under 7 if they could at all. And they don't, and, in Sat's words, they don't have any interest in getting near what Quinn Hughes is making. Now, could part of this be posturing?
That's
sure.
Also opening stanza.
Yes, exactly. Right. We're entrenching ourselves in a certain position as negotiations really get underway.
Well, if you don't have any room to give, you end up in a tough spot. Now, yep. If we're talking about a amped up version of the Uyghur deal, which is what Jason Buchla was suggesting, right? So then you're talking about 6.25 million adjusted for cap inflation. I mean, you're talking about 6.75 to 7 million, right? In that range. The thing to sort of monitor there is, man, I think Hronek can beat that number in year one out of arbitration. Easily. I think an arbitrator will award him off of a 55-point season significantly more, right? Uyghur's career high is 44 points. Hronek's already there with 15 games to play. So, it's going to be a really tricky one, I think, without question, for the Canucks to navigate here. The fact is that those numbers feel way low relative to what Hronek's leveraged position suggests that he's able to demand. And I don't think it's worth downplaying just how much leverage he has. We've been through the Pettersson situation and saw that leverage increase until the point where Pettersson and his camp ultimately sort of did a deal that didn't reflect
how unique their
leverage was. But Hronek might be a different matter entirely.
Yeah, it is important to keep that in mind, right? That just because a player has leverage doesn't necessarily mean they're going to use it, but you also don't know that everyone is going to decline to use it, right? Some players do want to use it.
Some players don't.
Those great unknowable variables in a situation
like this. Well, and it's one thing when a guy's spent six, 7 years here, put down roots in the community,
drafted by the team, leadership group, all of that,
long-standing relationships with teammates on and on. Hronek's been here 12 months. It's just a different scenario. I'm not saying he won't sign a team-friendly deal. I think ultimately you're going to face a decision as Hronek's camp, which is, do we want to push to maximize, what we get on our third contract, or do we want to, play with Hughes a ton and challenge to win here? It sucks for players to frame it in that sort of stark a manner, but this is one of the most straightforward ones I've seen.
I think the other interesting dynamic here is with Pettersson, part of his leverage was that he's on pace for a second 100-point season, a little off that now, but at the time we were having these discussions, on pace for a second 100-point season. And if he had gone, maximum hardball, the Canucks qualify him as an RFA, he takes a one-year deal out of arbitration and then hits UFA the next year, no hyperbole, he would have been the most in-demand free agent we've seen in decades? At least since Steven Stamkos, who kind of fake hit free agency, right?
Without question, he'd be ahead of the Tavares tier. So,
absolutely. So yeah. He would have been one of the most in-demand UFAs that we've seen in a long, long time in the NHL. With Filip Hronek, this is so clearly his career year that I think there's more incentive for him to get a deal done using this as his platform year. I don't think the play maximum hardball, take a one-year deal out of arbitration, and then hit unrestricted free agency is as enticing or as safe as it is for Elias Pettersson. Not to say that it's a disaster for him if he does that, but I don't think it's quite the same trump card that it was for Pettersson.
I disagree with you because I think there's the ability, if you're Filip Hronek, to you're not going to accept your qualifying offer. The one-year path for Hronek goes through arbitration or goes through a settlement on the very eve of arbitration, right?
Right.
At a one times 7.5 or 7 or something like that. Maybe 6.5, but I think he can get to 6.5 to 7 in an arbitration award given his production and minutes. And then hitting unrestricted free agency at the age of, what, 27, 26, as a right-handed defenseman off the back of probably two really good seasons, although the Canucks might decide to deal him in season in the event that it goes this way. But you still have the opportunity to hit and potentially in like a $95 million cap.
Yeah, that's the thing that cuts against my argument like the most, Hronek, is where the cap is at that point.
Hronek could, if he wants to, chase that Mozgov.
Could he be the NHL's Timofey Mozgov?
Someone will be.
Something to track.
Someone will be.
You know, actually, that wouldn't be a bad candidate for it with that kind of statistical profile going into
UFA. And he's on the exact right time frame.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what? We're close enough now for it to be realistic that I'm going to build my Mozgov list.
All right. I look forward to it. Yeah. Very exciting. Now,
the key to truly be a Mozgov is
it needs to be somebody that the league is, like, the style is also kind of passing them by. That's harder to hit, because that was the other thing with Mozgov. It's like, oh, and also big, slow-footed centers can't really play anymore, and we just gave you this deal.
Yeah.
It wasn't great.
So a workhorse starter.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, lineup notes. I believe it was an optional morning skate, so no line combinations, but I mean, they've won a bunch in a row here, so.
We know what it'll look like.
We're pretty much expecting no changes there. Obviously, DeSmith in net. Tyler Myers sounds like he's kind of day-to-day here. Rick Tocchet saying he could have played today, but they're easing him back in. No timeline for Dakota Joshua just yet. Playoff forecast and the out-of-town scoreboard here. Matthew Tkachuk and the Florida Panthers doing the Canucks a favor. 4-3 comeback regulation win over Dallas last night. So per Dom Lucision's model at the Athletic, Canucks and Dallas in a dead heat atop the Western Conference, both projected to finish with 111 points at the end of the year. So still all to play for in terms of winning the Western Conference for the Vancouver Canucks, especially after that loss by the Stars to the Panthers last night. And tough night for your Kraken. Blowing a late 2-goal lead to the Vegas Golden Knights. Probably good night on their playoff hopes.
Very likely. That was a huge opportunity missed given their 2-goal lead with 7 minutes to play. What a fun game, though. Oh, man.
A great night of hockey last night.
That's a playoff caliber team. I'll say that much. That first 2 months where they couldn't buy a goal, just they never dug out of it. We see it every season, right? Just like the Buffalo Sabres.
The hole is too big, yeah.
Like, you can't convince me that the Buffalo Sabres aren't better than the Islanders and the Red Wings and some of the other teams that are a little bit ahead of them. But
they were sure better than the Red Wings last night.
Well, way better. But they just... You get off to a hot start, or you are chasing all year. We know that story far too well in Vancouver. They're learning it in Seattle this season.
Gambling odds.
Gambling odds. The Canucks play the Vegas Golden Knights.
No, they play the Colorado Avalanche.
What did I say?
The Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, my goodness. Killing it. I've still got my head on the game from last night. The Canucks are -110 home favorites. Oh, boy. The Avs playing the second leg of a back-to-back, granted with some salt on that, are only +100 road dogs. That is wild.
Respect for the Avs. Well, it's also the DeSmith factor, too, there.
Ton of respect for the Avs, and the Demko factor looms large. It's actually steamed toward the Canucks as this line opened as a pure pick 'em. The over-under is set at 6.5 with more steam on the under. So people are expecting a pretty high-scoring game between two high-octane teams. Although, have they really played a high-scoring game?
This year, no.
It's been like 4 total goals in both games so far.
Yeah. Who's starting? It's Georgiev, because the other guy started yesterday. So, but
Georgiev versus DeSmith?
Yeah. Georgiev is 900 for the year, 901.
Thing to watch for me, there's two things I want to watch for, not just tonight, but sort of going forward. One though is tonight specific. The one that's tonight specific is the Canucks have so many good perimeter shooters, right? So many guys who are good at working off screens, and their best chances against the Avs last time came down low. Georgiev is one of the best goalies in the league down low, and is like still good, but far closer to human if you're picking a corner with some space. Now, easy to say, far harder to generate in an NHL environment, but the Canucks, I think if they're going to win tonight, some of that home plate stuff, that like mid-range scoring chance stuff, Quinn Hughes does a lot of gets a lot of shots off from there. JT Miller walking that downhill side. Pettersson We saw him score from there against the Kings. Like, those are the types of chances that this team's really got to look to generate tonight and every night, but especially against Georgiev. Georgiev, mid-range with elite shooters shooting at him. The Canucks are uniquely built with those shooters. Like, that's where they have to do damage. That's where they have to attack the Avs. That down-low stuff, it's still good. You want to have traffic. You want to have, you want to attack a goalie along the goal line, but Georgiev is uniquely strong against those types of scoring chances. So watch for that tonight. And then here's the other. I was thinking about it. On this Canucks' recent winning streak, we've seen a lot of teams play back against them. And it's sort of odd because it's in contrast to what had worked when the Canucks were losing some games from teams like Pittsburgh and, even Boston a little bit, where
Heavy forecheck,
yeah. Especially targeting Juulsen, Zadorov, and sort of Vancouver's bottom two pairs. What I'm really curious to see is, like, who is the first team that we're going to see that drops back against Hughes and goes against everyone else?
Yeah.
We're going to see it. I promise you we're going to see it. I don't even know that I'd drop back against Hughes. Not that I think you're better off forechecking him. Just that the Canucks, guys like Miller and Pettersson, are really smart at breaking the 1-3-1. They showed the Ducks that. They showed the Kings that. I don't know that that's like an antidote or a way to stop the Canucks necessarily, but I do think you have to get in on their bottom two pairs if you're playing them. I'm just really curious. We're going to see someone try it, and I'm just waiting for it. Is it Colorado? Because Jared Bednar is really smart. He might be the guy.
That's the whiteboard for today. Enjoy the game against the Avalanche tonight. We will be back tomorrow for more Canucks talk right here on Sportsnet 650.